This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial here in New York City. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And a nice surprise appearance today. We thought we were going to be doing confirmation hearings. Those will be put off till next week. So we're back, luckily, and I'm very happy to be with you. I want to thank Jeff Fogelman for his insistence that we do a program today because he said it's kind of essential. And here are the questions. I want you to think about the status of the world nowadays. How did we wind up in a world, get this, where airplanes crash into New York City? Right, we thought that was kind of unfathomable. Where suicide bombers proliferate the Middle East. That concept, you know, was odd at once. Now it's every day. Abu Ghraib prison. The thought that that could exist. And at the hands of our own soldiers and government. Now let's take it beyond our responsibility. How about the tsunami, right? And how that kills thousands of people. The horror of New Orleans, where we are right now, the response. But the hurricane itself, and the collapse of the levees, and the very flooding of the city. You know, there's a city, New Orleans. It's not there anymore. Bourbon Street is gone. How did that happen? How is that? How does that fit into our mind? The London bombings, right? The London subway bombings. Where does that fit? The horrors of Haiti, right? Just miles off the coast of America. The bridge in Iraq, where the people are trampled. The ethnic cleansing in the Sudan. Now, what do you feel as I describe all these? What do you feel? Do you feel yourself, did you notice that as I'm saying these things, you at first said, yeah, sure. I'm going to, you know, go over it. Okay, we talk about airplanes crashing into New York City. Oh, yeah, right. You know, you don't want to think about it too much. And then we talk about suicide bombers. Oh, we don't want to think about that too much. What's it like for a bomber to walk into a place where there are children and grown-ups and just blow himself up and everybody around him, and he thinks that's his only resort? The prison itself, and you think about it, by the point time I get to the third place, you are giving up on me. Your mind is giving up on me as I start talking about this funny world. And then I switch and I take it away from anything for which we, you know, United States, could be held responsible. And I take you to the giant flood in the Middle East, the tsunami, you know, and you say to yourself, oh, that's well, of course, that's nobody's fault. But how could you consider that level of tragedy? And then we go further, and you think of another flood, you know, the horror of New Orleans. Now, as I'm saying these, you're saying to yourself, okay, I get it. What's the point? Because a point of view, a part of you wants to get away from it. Can you understand that? Of course you do. Of course you don't want to feel connected to it. Of course you'd rather, you know, not have somebody remind you of it over and over again. You know, the horrors of television is that television loves to get people to watch television. Therefore, they broadcast the horrors so that you will watch television, because people like to see horrors on television. They like to see it. They like to say, oh, no, you know, show me that plane crashing into the building again and again and again and again. Let me watch it over and over again. Show me that one person struggling to grab onto a piece of timber again. But from television, we could do it, you see. Because on television, it's not real. You may weep, but you could weep at a movie, too. You could weep like you see actors. But on television, it's not real. It's not really happening. You don't have to take it in. You could see it, but you don't have to really take it in, because at the same time, you'll see a thriller or an action film where they're killing 1,000 people, or a movie where there's, you know, a giant tidal wave or the Titanic. You get used to this on TV. So if they show it to you on TV, you get hardened about it. You know, you don't really see it. You're disconnected from the tragedy. The bridge in Iraq. Trampling of people. Baby shoes. I mean, the whole idea that what the press could do is they could sell more newspapers and get you to watch television because they could show you details of these things. Things they're allowed to show you. No, not allowed to show you coffins coming back from Iraq. Not allowed to show you dead people in Iraq from other things. We're not allowed to show you that, but we will show you what happened on the bridge. The ethnic cleansing in the Sudan, just over the top. Too much. Too much, too much. We don't even want to hear about it. When I say we, I say people. Now, this brings about a very important question. How did we wind up in a world where we have so much information, but yet we can hear unspeakable horrors and still get by day to day? This is not a judgment. I'm not saying we shouldn't be able to get by day to day. I'm saying we do get by day to day. We can hear about New Orleans and people on a rooftop trying to struggle for survival, and we could turn off the TV and then go meet some friends for dinner. Okay? Now, does it sound like I'm putting judgment on this? No. What I'm more interested in is how does it work? This is Armand DeMille with you, my friends, with The Positive Mind. Luckily, we were put on the air today. We thought we were not going to be on during this entire week. We will be with you this week, it looks like. It looks like. And to those of you whom I've had appointments scheduled during the week, I'm sorry we had to cancel them. But WBAI comes first. That's my stated priority. Radio program first. We got to get this out there. So we're looking at how does this happen. So I was speaking to someone yesterday. I was speaking to an author. And we said, what is the possible feeling that everybody gets when they look at all of this? What is the feeling that everybody gets when they look at a government in action that we may disagree with? For those of you who had disagreement with government policies, what is the primary feeling that everybody has related to all of this? Here's a question for you. Well, do you think it's anger? There's one feeling. A lot of you get really angry. Do you think it's sad? Yes, yes, very, very sad. Do you think it's motivation? You know, you want to get up and you want to change things. You know, you want to quit your job and go down there to help. You know, I heard the firefighters here in New York were leaving to go down to New Orleans to help out. You know, all right. Okay. That's what you do. You know, I'm a rescue operator. We'll go down there. This is what I do. I rescue. And there's a need. Do you want to become a rescuer? What happens to your mind? And believe it or not, friends, this is a very, very important question, because what's going to come about as a result of this is we have to find the other side. There's only one way that horror can take place and people can sit still about it, passively. They could be okay with it. You know, I mean, if it were my grandmother, she'd be pulling her hair out, running all over the place if she heard about a terrible horror. She couldn't live with herself, you know? My great-grandmother, I'm sure, wouldn't even want to hear 1 minute of it, because people back then wouldn't. They couldn't deal with this level of tragedy. It was like, oh, no, it's much too big. So I think something's happened to us, okay? And here are the two things that I think have happened. Number one, we've gone numb. Yes, we have gone numb. We have a growing numbness that has taken place inside of us, kind of like in the war, you know. There was a numbness that took place during the Second World War. Numb, you go numb. Because if you were in Germany during the Second World War or France, and you would hear about horrors, you know, or Czechoslovakia, you would hear about the horrors of the war, and you would just hear about them, and you'd eventually become like a soldier, you know. Oh, yeah, 22,000 people got killed. Yeah, 4,000 people got shot up. You go numb. How do you go numb? Is this numb a good thing? It may be a good thing. Because what if you were crippled by it? What if it affected you in such a way that you couldn't function? What if you took in the total, total amount of this? I mean, if you go to Haiti, and you look at the island, and you look at the condition, and you look at the politic, if you really allowed yourself, you would either become violently angry, or you would weep a tear that is bigger than all of mankind. How do we do it? Well, I say we go numb. Numb is a very interesting thing. There's a condition in neurology called alexithymia. Alexithymia is a very interesting concept. Not even a concept, it happens. It happens when your nerves can no longer feel. You know, do you ever get this tingling at the end of your fingers or something where you can't feel things, you go numb, your leg falls asleep? Alexithymia is the inability to sense things, to feel things neurologically. That's where it comes from. I took that word and I adapted it to psychology. Alexithymia, emotional alexithymia, is where we all go numb on the inside. We go numb to the world around us. If you think about it, what happens? The more horror that is reported to you, the more insular you get. The more you gather your children, you protect yourselves. You know how many home sales there are nowadays? You know why there are so many home sales? You know why so many people need to buy their own house and their own property and they can't live like they used to live in apartments and cooperative living? Because everybody's afraid of everybody else. They want to fortify themselves. They think if I get a house, I'll fortify my family. We'll be protected. We'll have our house. The big deal, you know. I mean, back when I was young, nobody wanted to own a house. A house was the kind of thing you get when you're old. Now young people want houses. And not only for the investment of it, they want to be safe because they have to be protected because they have this illusion that if they buy a home and they hide out in their home, nobody could bother them. Duct tape will save them. See? So how do we go numb? This is the question. And what happens to your heart? And what happened to your heart when you listened? If I were to ask you to call in and give me a response to this, almost every one of you would say to me, oh, I feel it all the time, and I feel it terrible, and you would tell me how deeply you feel about it, but in all truth, you don't feel about it, because if you really felt about it, if you really felt about New Orleans, you couldn't be listening to this radio program. If you really felt about these tragedies, if you really grieved, if you really dipped into it, you couldn't be functioning. So the body protects you. The mind is protected by a cloak. And I have two bits of information about it. Here's one, numbness. But there's another thing that made me suspicious. And here's the interesting concept. I think before I go there, I'm going to take some calls. We have this opportunity here today because... Sure, what kind of music? Okay. Why would he do that? Be right back with... Oh, okay. Here's a little music for you. This is going to be an interesting trick for us today. 212-209-2900 is the number. 212. You don't hear me. 212.
You're very
Oh, it's going to be a very interesting concept now. All right. Now, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to try something brand new out today. We're going to work with our delay system, which has become mandatory. Let's see what happens as we get a call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello. My name is Jean Denver, Africans United for Sanity. Now, I'm calling you from Suffolk County. And the reason that I'm calling you is because I think we have been diluted into a triage. We don't want to look at the 5,000-plus lynchings in this country. We don't want to look at the vitriolic violence towards people of color and cultural difference. We don't want to look at the starvation in the Sudan, the Darfur people.
Wait, just a moment. Could you please?
Yes.
What's your name?
I told you my name at the beginning.
You had to say it again, please.
Okay. My name is Jean.
Okay, Jean.
Wilkins Jean, Denver.
Jean, just a second. Just a second.
Yes?
I know about the we in the world.
Yes?
What about you?
All
what
right.
happens? What I want to know is what happens to people, because everybody could get on and talk about people in general.
May I tell you what we have done personally?
You personally?
Yes, personally, myself.
Yeah.
I have sponsored community mental health conferences for the last 14 years to oppose electric shock and drugging of children and elderly people and vulnerable people.
Okay, hold it, Jean.
Yes?
Jean, we're way off the subject here.
No, we're not. We're on the subject.
I understand what you're saying. It's not the question I'm asking, okay? Maybe I wasn't being clear.
I think you're being very clear.
Yeah.
How do we escape from reality is what you're saying.
I'm asking you how you do it.
How I do it?
Yeah.
I take in the information, I write letters, and I get involved with the local organizing committee for the Millions More demonstration October 15th. I'm doing that. I walk in the street and hand out the flyers. I walk in my community and hand out the flyers. I'm 75 years old. And I've been doing this for 25 years. Since the first time I took training with the National Black Political Assembly and...
Well, Jean, I get it. I get it very much. Thank you very, very much. I get what you're saying, and I understand. That's one, you're an activist, and there are certain people who are very active. But it doesn't address what I'm trying to put out, and perhaps I didn't even say it closely enough. Or clearly enough. I want to know about the heart. Yes, as an activist, you're probably right in there doing everything you can. But I want to know from the people who cry on the inside. And I want to know what happens. I want to know what happens inside your heart when you look at all of this. How do you feel? 212-209-2900. Let me take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Well, first, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. It was a wonderful surprise to be put back on the air after we thought we were going to be having to listen to the hearings.
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad, not glad that you're on the, I mean, because of the circumstances, but, I'm glad that your show is on the air and just yeah. WBAI in general, because you do a great service to the community. Unfortunately, enough of us don't listen to you, but that's a whole other issue.
Right, that's another one. But what happens to you? What happens to you when you hear about New Orleans? What happens to you?
I just really you have to watch it because it's important that we're there to watch it and judge. And make sure that, you know, we see all the travesties that the people are doing. Because, in a way, it re-energizes you because it lets you know that those were real people down there suffering. And we have people around us that we need to go out and help.
What's your name, by the way?
Kenny.
Hey, Kenny, try this one, okay? Just try me because I hear you're a real brave guy. For being on the radio and for listening. Instead of the we, try the I, Kenny. Now, Kenny, when you hear about a tragedy, in a way, it energizes you. But when you see death and destruction, even let's not say just New Orleans with all of the mishap that took place there, but something like the tsunami or a flood or tragedies or an earthquake, when you see where there may be nobody directly responsible except nature, and you see this death and destruction, what do you do? What happens to your heart? What happens when you look at it? Do you look at it intellectually and say, or does it make you cry?
Well, I think this is where there's a dichotomy between the intellectual and the spiritual. Part of me looks at it in terms of, this is crazy. I can't believe this is going on. But then another part of me is just, I have faith in God and that it must be part of his plan to have all these travesties or incidents take place, you know, and sometimes you don't understand it, but you just have to accept it.
So there's that. Now that's one solution, and that's been a very important solution for many people, to have a belief, especially a religious belief to fall back on. It begins to say, well, I don't understand it, but even if I don't understand it, I know it has some meaning that is related to something bigger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I understand, Kenny. And that gives you some resolve, because otherwise you would look at it and you would just feel, do you cry anyway?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, as I watched it yesterday and I listened to the stories and they played people calling for help, I cried. I mean, my heart cried. You know, like sometimes it's, you know, males, especially black males, like we have to wear that mask and everything. But yesterday I couldn't wear that mask. I had to really cry. I mean, because it was just heartbreaking to see the callousness of our government in terms of not, you know, going in there immediately to ameliorate the needs of these people.
Yeah, and even if it isn't, even if you take our government out of it, to hear people screaming for help, you know, and just to hear it, period.
But I mean,
so close. I mean, I understand we get to the blame. You see, because the anger helps us. Getting angry at somebody helps us stave off the feeling.
But you know, the other piece of it that really, and this is something I'm disappointed in myself in. I've become desensitized to just the events that go on around me because, you know, we saw the destruction going on there. And, you know, everybody's trying to do stuff, and I was frustrated. And I was like, well, what can I do? But then I realized that day after day I walk past, like, the homeless on the street.
That's right.
Or I see some mother who's struggling with kids, and I don't really reach out to help. Or somebody has a stroller going in the subway. So I think just trying to achieve that American dream, whatever that is, or being on that treadmill we call life, you lose sight of those things.
You know, and now you bring up a very good point, Kenny, because part of what people believe, if they let themselves feel and experience the reality, they should do something about it. And therefore, if they're not going to do anything about it, they don't want to feel the inhumanity. And I think you make a great point there. It is perfectly all right to not reach out your hand, but it's okay if you dare feel it. If you dare feel the human tragedy. I can't tell you the number of times somebody with a child has been begging for money. And the person look wide-eyed, eyes dilated, stoned. And they've got a little baby and they're saying, give me money for my baby. And I know the money's going to drugs. So I look at the tragedy of it. And I may, you know, do whatever I can to guide the person. But I know giving them money is not helping the baby.
Nope.
You know, is not helping the child at all. In fact, it may be hurting the child. And my heart just cracks, you know. I look at it and I see the tragedy of this. And if each and every situation I saw, I would try to take on, I probably would never get to work in the morning.
Exactly. So.
But it doesn't mean, but I want to remind myself that these are my brothers and my sisters and this is all my family and it all hurts.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, those are the things that are important, but I mean, I just look at, like, the history of our inhumanity toward each other. And actually, I was actually thinking about writing something. And I remember something that Joseph Stalin, the Russian dictator, said. And he said that one person is a story, but a million people is a statistic. When, you know, one person dies, it's a story. But when a million is a statistic, but it's almost like it's become reversed. When it's a million people... It's a story, but when it's one person, it's just another statistic.
Let me ask you one more thing that I dare, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Since I'm not, as an African-American male,
yes.
There is a part of you that has numbness almost conditioned, right? I mean, throughout history, numbness is what was they depended on so that you would stay from being ragefully angry.
Yeah.
And you could feel yourself challenge that almost, that mandatory numbness that kind of supposed to go with you. Because you see it everywhere. And you say to yourself, yes, I understand, but I can't shut it off anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the crazy part about it is I'm working on a PhD. And in my classes, I listen as a lot of my white professors, and they're good people, but... It's sort of, when you're a black intellectual, you still work with the realm of spirituality, and I see it less so in my white counterparts, because they don't have to go through life in America as a black person, and if I didn't have that spirituality to fall back on, I don't know where I might be.
Yeah, I understand. And one would imagine that the only answer would be, if you didn't have the spirituality to fall back on, the thing that would happen is you would wind up becoming ragefully angry. But it's even worse than that. Worse than that is we may feel the sadness underneath it.
Yeah, but I think a part of it, you wouldn't be angry. I think you'd just go mad. I think you'd just
go crazy.
Yeah, man. Like Marvin Gaye song makes you want to holler, throw up both your hands. And I think that's the part where you need some sort of spirituality to comfort your mind or just allay, you know, some of those feelings that you're going through.
What's your doctorate in?
Oh, urban education policy.
Yeah, really glad you're in this team. Thank you, Dr. Kenny.
Well, thank you, and continue the good work that you're doing.
And continue yours, too. I can hear.
Thank you. I'll definitely check in your show from time to time, because I listen to Hugh in the afternoons, but today I just decided to leave the radio on all day.
Now, and you could hear the Positive Mind on the website. You could listen to all the archived programs. Some of them are really fascinating. You in particular should pay attention to a thing called the refugee syndrome that we have on our archives, which is if you go to thepositivemind.com.
Positivemind.com.
Yeah, and you'll hear there's one called the refugee syndrome. I think you, in your field of study, would find that really fascinating.
And the refugee syndrome. I will definitely do that. And I'm sorry for monopolizing so much of your time.
Never.
Well, you be well and continue the good work.
Thanks a lot, Kenny.
Have a good day.
Mm-hmm. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Touches my heart. Hey, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to go considering more about this. We're going to take a short break, a little music, and when we get back, we'll go further into this.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Tahrir, Liberation. Marhaba, I'm Barbara Nimri Aziz. Tahrir is a long WBAI tradition and still strong in voices of the Arab Muslim community here and abroad. I invite you to tune in Tuesday evenings at 7 for discussions on Islam and society, justice and injustice, in-depth interviews with writers from across the world, and Fen Mashnoon, Crazy Arts, with Dean and Maysoon.
So now comes this other important question, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Your music is from the 25th anniversary of the Café Del Mar. That piece is by Omaya, by Novo and OVO. So now comes a very important question. Let's say that we could feel, if the entire world were activists and refused to allow... Would you back her today? And refuse, do you feel the weight of the world on your shoulders? You know, if you suddenly find yourself aching, you might be feeling the toll of ignoring everything. You know, it just takes so much effort to ignore everything. And just think about the entire world can do it. I mean, everybody is doing it right now. I was looking at headlines from France related to New Orleans. And they were so sympathetic and heartfelt, so different than our headlines. They talked about the tragedy of it and the poor American people who were caught in there. And the headlines from all the different French newspapers treated the humanity of it, not the way we treated it, which was to exploit it to get everybody either angry or get everybody feeling overly reactive, you know, not overly reactive, but, you know, very sad. We wanted the tragedy of the thing, and they felt the tragedy of humanity, is the way they reported it in the newspaper, the French newspapers. So we think about it. You think about a world in which we have biological terrorism, finding out that medications that you've been taking, that your grandmother's been taking for 20 years suddenly can kill her or may have killed her, like Vioxx and things like that. You know, finding out that, you know, aspirin is no good for you. Finding out, I'm saying beyond what we've said here at the station, but finding out definitively we've been defrauded by drug companies that sell us drugs, you know. You get more honesty from your corner dealer than you do from Hoffman LaRoche. I wonder if they're still around, Hoffman LaRoche. They used to be the big drug company. Oil. How about gasoline? $4 a gallon. That may not mean much to you, and many of you out there who ride bikes may say, good, that'll teach you. But there are farmers who can't farm because that breaks their back, because it goes over the edge. How do we get to this point? What do we do as we watch the tragedies around us? What do? And we turn off. But there's another thing to it. I say, how could we have watched a political situation in which there are so many clear inhumanities and sat still? Could this have happened over all of the years? Do you think it's possible that 40 years ago, if everything had been exposed about lying in the government and stuff like that, that we would have tolerated it? You think we would have possibly? Stay with me. Well, I don't think so. She is. Okay, call Michael. Let's get Michael. Michael, I think you can make that call right now because we have a guest who we're going to have on the air as well. Well, I don't think we would have, because I think there's something else that goes on with us besides the numbness. Besides the numbness, I think there is a feeling, are you ready? There is a part of us that welcomes hearing tragic news. And the part of us that likes it, and this is going to be hard for you to believe, is the feeling of being powerless. There is something very appealing. You know, Michael, in fact, cancel that call because I want to take callers today. It's a little too late. We won't do that. Maybe tomorrow if we can. But there's a part of people that like being powerless. This is going to be very, very hard to believe. Very hard. You're going to doubt this in your mind. People like to be powerless. Think about your entire life. In your entire life, you've had to struggle to do things. It's a struggle. You're fighting for power your whole life. You fight for power as a child. You fight for power in school. You compete with other schools. You do everything you can. Power, 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 power. You're fighting against people who have power over you. You get a job and you have a boss or a leader who's more powerful than you are. And so you try to become a boss so you become more powerful. You have children and you try to emphasize that, you know, you have more power than they do. You try to encourage them to assert their own power. Power, 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 power. And then you hear the story of a friend of mine who was a very active political guy, and then he told me about one day when he was thrown in jail and there was nothing that could happen to him. He couldn't do anything. He had called all the people as a result of a political protest, called everybody he could call, and there he was in a prison in Vermont. He said there was nothing he could do. He said, for the very first time in my life, there was nothing. No cell phones, nobody to talk to. There were no guards around. There was nobody else in the prison. He was the only guy in the entire prison. And he said he got the best sleep he ever got in his life. He put his head down, and for once he said, there's nothing I could do. There is something about the appeal of powerlessness that is at play here. Now, this may be a very hard concept to get, because none of you want to feel powerless, because you think of all the people who are in these tragedies are powerless. But there's a kind of a time when you feel so overwhelmed. Like if you look at another lie exposed by our current dictators, you know, and they say, we just found out that the race for governor was fixed. You know, and that they found out and it was fixed and they're not going to do anything about it, you would go, another thing, more powerlessness on your part. And even I am not making a statement for saying you should assert your power. I am saying the reason that we could live in a world with such a dichotomy is because something about powerlessness appeals to people. Think about it. You finally don't have to fight. You give up. You give up trying to be a government, you know. You give up trying to stop the war. You give up trying to fight for what's just. You give up the peace rallies. You give up. You just join them. You know, you try to get a house. You try to get more money. You try to be a part of it in some way. You go out and you buy gas in little parts of town where gas is cheaper. You're joining the system. Powerlessness. Powerlessness is very appealing. The prostitutes who used to work on Capitol Hill would report that whenever they got customers who were from Capitol Hill, senators, representatives, the thing they liked the most in the world was to be subjected to sex while they were bound and tied and whipped. Powerlessness has a tremendous appeal. And although none of you may like it, and although none of you ever want to admit it, if you think of the very fact that you could turn it over to somebody, that you could let somebody take charge, that there is a part of almost everybody who would like to have someone else do it for them. Think about it. Think about powerlessness as appealing. Now, if you do, you run into, of course you're all going to object. I'm going to get a million letters. They're probably going to take me off the air for saying it. But it is how it exists. The only way this government could exist is if there was a group of people who were welcoming the powerlessness of the might, of the shock and awe of a government that has absolutely no concern for the people and the people's wishes. They say, we'll march in and do whatever we want, and you will stand by and watch it. Why? Because we will hypnotize you into your own powerlessness. We'll make it so big, because that's exactly what George Bush thought when he went into Afghanistan. He said, we will hit them with such power that they'll throw up their arms because they'll never see anything so big. And that's been the strategy, my friends. You have been hit, inundated over and over and over again with such stuff that you feel totally powerless. And it's not that the powerlessness is bad. There's a part of you that likes it. And I know that sounds like bad news. But if you begin to understand it, and you begin to see it, and you begin to understand the appeal, think in your own personal life. I mean, were you ever sexually powerless? People love that. Let somebody else take over for a while. You ever just held like a baby, you know? Does anybody ever just hold you and say, it's all right, there's nothing you could do now. Nothing you have to do. I'll take care of it. Very appealing. Especially to those of you who are powerful all the time. 212-209-2900 as we go to delay. That worked. I'm surprised it worked. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I'd like to hear from you, and I know you're going to get mad at me for saying it, but I'm saying if you would, take on the concept of you like powerlessness. See if you could fit that in your life, and you're going to learn a great deal about yourself and other people. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call if it's there. Michael, thank you very much. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Yeah, we'll get it. We're using a 15-second delay nowadays. New government rules, we've got to have them, but we're going to make it work. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi there.
Yes, my comment is for the tragedy that happened in New Orleans. I mean, day two, I knew what was going to happen. I knew they were going to allow those people to die. And the sad thing about it was for money. I don't know who said it, but they said follow the money. That town was allowed to go down so those rich people could get the assurance on their property. It was about money. They let people die. They stopped the rescue.
Now, let me ask you something. When you heard this, is your radio all the way turned down?
Yes.
When you heard about this, I mean, now, let's not stand back and talk about who did what to who, because we really know that part. That part we've got. What did you feel when you saw it all?
I felt sad.
Yeah, no. Now, when you felt that sad and you looked at it, did you cry?
Did I cry? I turned my TV off. I'm boycotting television. I don't look at television. I don't even buy the newspaper because I'm boycotting it.
Because you didn't want to watch it?
I didn't want to watch it because I knew it was about money. Everything was about
money.
Okay,
so what you did was this. You felt sad. And then you put it in your mind and you said, this is all about money, so you stopped feeling sad?
I didn't stop feeling sad. It was just, it was sad that we came so low as human beings.
Right.
That we care about things than human lives. We cared about a television than a little black child being rescued. We stopped a rescue operation because a few people was looting. But I just want to say the big boys, they came in, they looted the whole place. They looted the diamonds. They looted the banks. They really looted. And the big crook is Bush and his whole administration.
Thank you for calling in. And she got mad and she hung up because you know what happened? As she was talking, I didn't get her name, did we? No. As you were talking, you felt it in your heart. You felt the passion rising, and you just wanted to turn off your TV like you got off the radio. I understand. I understand. Sometimes the mechanism doesn't switch in. That makes it okay. Not that it should. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. My name is Gail.
Hello, Gail.
Calling from New Jersey. I watched what happened. I was glued to CNN every morning, afternoon, and evening. Now I'm glued to the radio. I came off the TV. Now I'm on the radio. And listening to you and speaking about how some people may like to feel powerless, I'm a person who... I'm usually in pretty good control of myself. And generally, being the eldest in my family, the eldest sibling, pretty much trying to keep the family together. This is all very personal for me.
Yeah, I hear, Gail.
I have family who lived in New Orleans.
But, Gail, let me ask you a question. As the head of a household, as somebody who's always in control, isn't there ever a moment when you give it up and you say, oh, I just can't do anymore. I can't do anymore. I quit.
I can't remember a time in my life.
I know. Imagine that. You know when it happens, Gail? It happens right before you die. You know, and this is what happens to people who are in power. They say, I mean, and I've seen enough people right before they died who said, there's nothing I could do anymore, and they give it up. There is a part of you that will watch television obsessively, you know, and then you'll just keep going from one to the other because you're such a fighter. You're so much in charge.
And I'm trying to...
And you're totally powerless the whole time.
Have faith and keep hope. I'm just...
So, Gail, is there ever a day when you're not taking care of somebody?
No.
Yeah. Okay, so, Gail, let me do you... This is a favor. Give yourself a diet. Go on a diet for one day and take care of nobody. And find a new part of yourself.
You know, I don't, Armin, I don't think I can do that. And I'll tell you why. I am married. I have a husband. And it was interesting for me to listen to what you were saying about how some people really, I guess, I don't know if they enjoy it, but they do feel powerless. My husband, who is retired, and I won't say what his retired profession was, my husband is always saying to me, well, Gail, you should do this. And get, oh, this is a tragedy, Gail. This is what you should do. And I said to him one day, I said, why are you saying that I must do something or someone else must do something? Why isn't it you say you
That's
must
right.
do something?
So that doesn't tell me why you can't take one day and not take care of anybody. Just to see what it's like. It's an interesting concept, right, Gail? You don't have to answer it.
Very interesting. I don't even
It's an
know
interesting concept. It's like when I was a kid, I used to get on a subway with only enough of a token to get me wherever I was going, and I was going to have to – I had to stay on the subway because I couldn't get off because I would have to – I wouldn't have any way of getting back. But I would do it to see how far the subway would take me. And the subway would take me from Far Rockaway all the way up to Northern Bronx. And I would go back and forth and back and forth, but I couldn't get off the subway because I didn't have another nickel to go anywhere else. And there was something about being a captive where I would just give up and say, okay, this is all I got. I'm in it. I give up. And I'm like you know, Gail. I'm usually in control of
things. Yeah, Armin, I think I would like to be able to be in a position where I could do that, but I don't think that I am.
Uh-huh.
And I personally, I don't know if it's my nature or...
You're born into it. You're the eldest child. It is required of oldest children, but we all have this choice. It's just an experiment.
But Armin, I just want to say one other thing.
Sure.
Sometimes I was watching CNN and NBC and going from station to station just to hear what was going on. And then after I'm watching for a while, I'm saying, I see all of this devastation. And I wonder if the media may be trying to desensitize us as a people.
Very
so
interesting
that we will
concept.
Be accustomed to seeing this kind of devastation. And so then we become paralyzed. We feel there is nothing we can do. Oh, we're used to this now. This is what we've seen. I have never in my life seen anything like I witnessed. I've lived through, as a matter of fact, I have to say I've marched through the Vietnam era. I protested.
We would have never imagined that anything at this level would have
never.
Happened. But you see what I'm saying, Gail? Is that we're becoming desensitized because just as they could produce a movie and put it on television where they invent a tidal wave and they put it and they make it a movie thriller, it becomes equated to that, you see? We're already seeing these tragedies. Thank you for calling in, Gail. I've got to get going.
Thank you, Armin.
Sure. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's very hard to get this conceptually, my friends, that part of what goes on is this sense of powerlessness that in some way is very appealing. I mean, sometimes you just want to be, you know, be thrown over the desk. Sometimes you want to just give it all up and throw it all on the floor. Hey, back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., I think, and Thursday. This is Armand DeMille with you. The website is thepositivemind.com, WBAI 99.5 FM. If you want a copy of today's program, you call 212-757-4488. Back with you tomorrow, my friends.
Tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free, community radio, WBAI, WBAI.org, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. A little bit of a reshuffling that we have gone through here at WBAI in this day, after Labor Day. And by the way, all of the individuals who came out and helped support WBAI and stopped by the WBAI booth, and all of the producers and all of the technicians who helped make that possible, a big thank you very, very much. And it was a job well done. We were supposed to be bringing you Pacifica live coverage of the Senate confirmation hearings for Supreme Court Justice nominee John Roberts, but with the death of William Rehnquist, some things have been put off for just a bit. So we're back on regular programming now. Coming up at 2 o'clock will be the Tuesday Arts Magazine Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton at 3 p.m. and Taking Aim with Ralph Shulman and Maya Schoen at 5, and the WBAI Evening News at 6 p.m. An announcement or two before we move on to the Tuesday Afternoon Arts Magazine. Please stay tuned.
Well, didn't it rain, July?
Disaster in the Delta, a report through the eyes of the victims. The people who live in the Mississippi-Louisiana Delta are experiencing North America's greatest natural tragedy. Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced. The death toll is rising geometrically with each passing hour, and tens of thousands may die from disease and the lack of food and clean water, all due to the federal government's slow and inadequate response. Many others will never recover from the emotional stress of this tragic ordeal. This is indeed a U.S. catastrophe of unrivaled proportions. Join WBAI as we air a four-hour special report on the disaster in the Delta. This special program will be aired tonight, Tuesday, September 6th, between the hours of 7 p.m. and 11 p.m.
God's gonna send the water from Zion, and he's gonna raise his heaven up higher. It's gonna rain, but it's gonna rain, but it's gonna rain.
And we have another report to share with you that's upcoming here over WBAI.
Dear listeners, this is Indra Hardat, Interim General Manager of WBAI, and I'm inviting you to tune in on Saturday, September 10, from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. for a report to the listener. September 30th is the end of our fiscal year, and despite a successful summer mini drive, we're still experiencing financial difficulties. The staff and I will discuss this and other matters. So please join us for the report to the listener. Again, that's Saturday, September 10th, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And I look forward to hearing from you.
After 4 years, the truth surrounding 9/11 still remains suppressed. That's why on Sunday, September 11th, New York 9/11 Truth invites you to a march and rally. It's time to end the media blackout. Starting at 1 p.m. at the New York Times Building, 229 West 43rd Street, we'll march to Fox, CNN, and NBC to a 4 p.m. rally at Dodd Commercial Plaza at the United Nations. At 7 p.m., come to our second event, Creating a Culture of Truth, at St. Mark's Church, 10th Street and 2nd Avenue. For details, go to www.ny911truth.org or call 212-714.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.